Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit. Bandwidth for the new screensavers is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. The new screensavers is brought to you by Blue Apron, the number one fresh ingredient and recipe delivery service in the country. See what's on the menu this week and get three meals free with your first purchase and free shipping by going to blueapron.com/NSS. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, work with one that has your best interest in mind. Use Rocket Mortgage for a transparent, trustworthy home loan process that's completely online at quickenloans.com/NSS.
We tear open the Nintendo Switch, show you how to tech securely, and meet a man who has spent over $4,000 on No Man's Sky. Live from the Twit's East Side Studios in beautiful Petaluma, this is the new Screensavers.
Dan Lines from Tucson, Arizona. Thank you, Dan, for doing the show open. Look who this is. This tall, long, tall drink of water. Pepper-flavored water.
Today, yeah. I mean,
is our newest spicy Twit staff member. And I'm so pleased to welcome Nathan Oliveras-Giles from formerly of the Wall Street Journal. Although I think you're going to keep writing a little bit for them, I hope.
Maybe on a freelance basis. Yeah.
I didn't realize you're so tall. Can we get a shorter Nathan Oliveras-Giles? Oh, that's much better. Anyway, I'm thrilled to welcome you. Of course, you've done this show before. You've been on Twit many times.
Yeah.
And it's just great. Thank you for having the faith in us to come over here.
Yeah, I'm excited to work alongside y'all and, you know, hopefully do some good stuff and learn a lot in the process. And, yeah, I should be on Tech News Today all next week filling in for Jason. So, I guess I'll be on new screensavers, what, like twice a month?
I hope so. Yeah. I knew we were brothers in arms when I noticed we both had matching clutches.
For our Nintendo Switches.
Oh, yes. That's much more manly.
mine makes it better.
Mine just came from this is from, it's called Waterfield, sfbags.com. And it's really kind of cool. See, it's got the little holders for the games that don't yet exist.
Oh, it's a classier look. For sure.
That's exciting. And then the Switch is in here, and it's got like a little padded cell for it so it doesn't get scratched, because apparently these are easily scratched.
Yeah, mine is a lot less classy. It's just kind of
But yours is official.
It's some kind of third party. I have one game.
Okay. Yeah, so do I. One game. That's all anybody has.
And a fancy little,
you have a rag. Microfiber cloth.
Yeah.
But you need this because the Switch does not come
with a case,
with anything. And so you're kind of carrying it around, and it feels like you're going to break it, frankly.
Really? You think so? I'm just worried about scratching the screen. If I threw this in my backpack, you know, with a laptop battery charger or, you know, a set of headphones or something.
There's just so many buttons and knobs and stuff. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a teardown in a bit. We've got the folks from iFixit. They're going to take it apart. Maybe they can help us solve the left controller problem.
Yeah, I've got some questions for them, so we'll see if they got some answers for
us. Also coming up, as Dan mentioned, we've got a guy who likes the game No Man's Sky so much that he built the ultimate No Man's Sky computer.
There's no more level of hardcore than what this guy has done for No Man's Sky.
He got a lot of hate on Reddit, apparently.
He did.
For doing that. Yeah. I want to love No Man's Sky. You and I were talking about this.
I'm the same way. You know, I've put in a couple dozen hours into the game, and it got a bit repetitive. It's very much, like you said, it's a grind. And, you know, it's fun to see these new worlds, but there's no one else really to interact with. There's some animals and some plants from time to time, but I want to love it. I'm not there yet. Hopefully,
Blake Patterson will be with us. He'll explain why it's worth $4,000 worth of hardware. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. We've also got a very expensive but apparently very nice in-ear headphone from Odyssey, the iSign. It's the first planar magnetic headphones. Mm-hmm. Jason Howell will be reviewing that. Kevin Rose, the dark tipper, is back. He's got a dark tip for us. Brian Burnett will look at another robotic vacuum, this one from Dyson. So
I wonder, can they out-robot iRobot? You know,
that's a question. It's a question.
What are they going to do?
We've got some calls for help. But first, the top stories of the week. There's one, and I'm curious what you think of it, that really makes me nervous. Edina, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
The police are researching. There was a guy who was attempting wire fraud. He had like a $24,000 wire he was trying. Didn't successfully send.
Nope, didn't pull it off.
Was using a phony name. They're trying to figure out who it was. So they went to a judge with the most outrageous search warrant I've ever heard of.
Yeah.
They want to go to Google and say, we want you to go through all of the searches in the town of Edina and see if you can find who searched for this name. It's Douglas blank. We don't know. Yeah. We don't know what the last name is. Douglas something.
And basically, if you search for that name, you'd find a person of this, a picture of this person, and that was what was used to try and commit this passport fraud that never actually was pulled off.
So they're trying to figure out who in Edina did this,
who searched for this person's name.
And they figure if we got that, but they don't just want that. If you get a hit, they want Google to hand over name, address, social security number,
IP address, MAC address,
everything.
It seems like a major overreach. And actually, Jason Howell and I earlier in the week reached out to the Electronic Frontier Foundation, spoke with one of their lawyers about this, and it sounds like it could set a dangerous precedent.
Terrible.
If Google complies. Now, Google hasn't complied with this yet. The judge agreed, let's
ask
Google
approved
and try and make this happen.
What's Google? I would presume Google's next step, they haven't responded, would be to say no.
Yes.
And then appeal if they get, I think a higher court needs to look at this. I hope that there's a way for the higher court to look at it. Google should not hand this information over.
Yeah.
Imagine if you said, hey, Google, I want to know everybody who searched for pressure cookers in New England in the days before the Boston Marathon bombing.
Mm-hmm.
It's of that order. I want to know everybody who searched for hummus recipes because they might be terrorists. It's of that order. It is a horrible precedent.
Yeah, it's basically going out and getting that information, getting you involved and making you kind of a suspect, and then deducing after that point
right.
as to whether or not you should be involved in this or not.
It's a fishing expedition.
And that's where the overreach question right. comes from. Now, I think if you don't understand necessarily how technology and how data works, you might think, hey, this sounds like a good idea. If someone searched for the search term, let's find out all the people who did and go knock on doors. But if you actually understand how important and private this data is, you can see how dangerous of a precedent this could set.
Yeah. Terrible precedent.
Yeah.
You have a Google Home.
I do.
Do you ever do that where you go, good morning, Google Home, and then it'll say, hi, it says, hi, Nathan, it's 53 degrees, you have four appointments.
And I was doing that, but it wasn't that helpful, so I basically stopped, and now I just basically talk to it when I want sports scores or the weather.
One of the things it would do if you said good morning is it would tell you this date in history. I remember one day it said, it's Steve Martin's birthday, and then it did a quote from King Tut. You know, he's my favorite monkey or whatever. And I thought that was cute.
Yeah.
That was cute. So apparently, was it yesterday or the day before? I guess it was the day, it was Thursday, because it was opening night for the new Disney film Beauty and the Beast.
Yes.
And apparently the Google Home said, oh, good morning, Nathan. And now some people call this ads. I don't think it's an ad. I think it was just an can you play the audio? Let's hear it.
Okay, Google. What's my day like?
Hello, Bryson. The time is 7:44 a.m. The weather in Park Ridge currently is 21 degrees and sunny, with a high of 37 degrees. Your commute to work is currently 39 minutes by public transit.
This is great stuff. I like this.
By the way, Disney's live-action Beauty and the Beast opens today.
What?
Version of the story
Well, that kid loved it.
Maurice. That rings truer if you ask me. For some more movie fun, ask me to tell you something about Belle.
Now...
Have
was
a
that,
good one.
Was
Here's
that,
the latest news.
Would you think that was paid for by Disney?
I don't know. What I think it might be is the ads team is genuinely experimenting with something. They're working on what it would look like if Disney were to pay. And then it kind of got out there in the wild a little bit ahead of time.
I want to believe that it was just like Steve Martin's birthday thing.
Well, they
it
were
was
just scraping
factoid.
The internet. They found some kind of weird fact and put it together.
Yeah, it was just a factoid and it was kind of fun. That's what Google said. It wasn't meant to be an ad. It was
well, then if that's the case, then someone needs to teach Google's AI the difference between an ad and a fun fact on a Friday, because there's a genuine difference there.
It does sound like an ad.
Whether that's an ad or not, whether they paid for it or not, that just sounds like an ad.
Yeah.
Right? And that's not necessarily what I want to be fed by my voice-controlled AI every Friday morning.
It doesn't matter if they were paid or not. That's an ad.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think humans write those. I mean, I'm sure humans write those. They have some team. They have an editorial team that says, oh, let's see what's today in history. What would be a fun one to, you know, cheer Bryson up or whatever. And that's just what came up. But anyway, Google probably won't ever do that again. That's my guess. Also, we got news for the Switch. What do they sell this for? This came out a couple of weeks ago. Can you buy one yet?
They're getting a little. They're still tough to buy, but they're a little bit easier.
Mine on eBay. I paid like $60 extra.
Okay.
Yeah,
they sold 1.5 million consoles so far in the first week alone. And that was basically as good as if not a little bit better than the Wii, which was our last blockbuster.
Holy cow!
So it seems like, I mean, you know, 1 week, it's too early to call this a success or a failure yet, but it seems like it's on its way as much as it can be at this point to not be a dud like the Wii U.
What game are you playing? Mario? Or you can't get Mario.
No,
yet, right?
There's no Mario titles yet, which is a bit frustrating, given that it's, you know, that's Nintendo's mascot, for Christ's sake.
I've been playing Zelda, which is a lot like No Man's Sky with clubs.
We're playing a lot of Zelda. I really love Shovel Knight. It's like an old school, like 8-bit style platformer.
Is that a download or is
that's a download? Okay. That's a download only. And then there's a Japanese RPG called I Am Setsuna, which is really great. And then if you're in F-Zero, there's a downloadable game called Fast RMX, which I am atrociously bad at. And then 1-2 Switch is kind of like, it's almost like Wii Sports, but it's more of like...
Is that the one where you milk a cow?
That is the one where you milk a cow. And so you're just like...
Does it have the gunfighter game in it too?
Yeah, it has all that. So it looks as uncomfortable and as awkward as you might think.
Wait. See, I got these blobs. What do I do with those blobs?
You gotta slash through them with your sword.
I got a sword? What sword? Yeah. All I got is an arrow and maybe a club.
Yeah, press Y to pull out your sword.
I have Y? I have a sword?
No, maybe you don't. Okay,
see that? Oh, he just butted me. He headbutted me.
All right.
See, look at—he's pulling stuff out, and nothing comes out.
Press plus to look through your.
No, wait a minute. I have this. How about a club?
Yes,
club
work? You can use that.
Yes. Okay. All right. Whoa! Blob. Now this is the other thing: is sometimes I throw it, sometimes I hit him with it. How do I hit him?
Just why? Why?
Why? Oh, ow. Ooh, ow. Ooh.
You're not good at this.
I am not good at this. There. Oh, I got him. He's just a big water blob.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, that was easy.
Now you pick up the choo-choo jelly. That's
choo-choo
what
jelly? Yeah. Okay. What good is choo-choo jelly?
Well, you can sell it for a pretty nice penny.
I've got choo-choo jelly.
Or you can like mix it into like.
Get your choo-choo jelly here. I got choo-choo. Good. All right.
You only have 3 hearts. How long have you been playing this game? Not much, huh?
A lot.
Yeah?
Wait a minute. You get more hearts if you... Like, get stuff?
Yeah, it looks like you're not even off the Great Plateau.
No, because I keep getting killed.
This, to me, is one of the best Zelda games I've ever played.
I have to admit.
I'm a big Zelda
fan. There is a lot of attention to this. It's such an open world, and you can do things you wouldn't expect. Climb trees, chop trees down.
It's great.
Roll boulders.
But
it's fun.
You're going to die a lot. I did die a lot. I've lost count of how many times. Dozens and dozens of times I have died.
So my son's friend told me that there's 3 shrines I have to go to, and I have to pray in these 3 shrines, and then something magical happens.
Oh, yeah. So you go to...
I just got an ancient spring.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to hold on to that.
Yeah, get those, because you can build something, right?
You're going to need that later for some ancient armor.
And then there... Now,
I don't want to give any spoilers here, Leo.
Yeah, no, spoil away. Now I'm swimming, but I can't dive, right? Because there's stuff under the water.
You cannot dive, and if you... And I'm glad you got to a dry spot.
Because you'll drown, right?
If that green wheel runs out.
No, I knew that, because
Okay.
This is a... I have to say, it's a really good game, and that's the main reason I bought the Switch. If it were the only game, I would say, you know, this is cool.
Well, that's the thing, is, you know, right now... If you're a Zelda nerd like I am, go out and buy the Switch. It's great hardware. It's fantastic.
It's all you need.
But if this isn't your cup of tea, you really got to wait a few months. Let's see if Nintendo can deliver on the promises of delivering that Mario game before Christmas, getting Mario Kart out next month. And I'm encouraged that they're doubling production.
Yeah, we didn't finish the story. Sold 1.5 million, but they're...
Now they're going to double production.
Fill the pipeline with these.
But if they have delays in those games, like Mario Kart and like Mario Odyssey, then they're going to have a lot of people who are unhappy for spending $300 on this thing.
See, I got my Nintendo purse.
How much did your Italian carry-all cost you there?
$99.
$99?
It's got leather.
Okay. It looks...
SFBags.com. It's from Waterfield, I think.
It's definitely a more... upscale look than what I'm rolling around with.
You know, main reason I actually got this is because I want to bring it for the kid when we travel. Yeah, there it is. Yeah. Oh, I want to bring it with the kid. So I needed a case because it really needs to be protected.
No, that's actually super smart.
Plus, I feel like I'm really styling.
I was throwing mine into a beanie for a couple weeks, and that's not the way to go.
How durable is this, and what happens if you need to repair it? On the line with us from iFixit.com, our great sponsor, Evan Nerona. Hello, Evan.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
He's got a disassembled Nintendo Switch in front of him. You are a brave man.
You could say that.
Are you going to be able to put it back together and play with it?
I will definitely be able to put it back together. Some things might not work, but generally it came apart pretty easily, so okay. I expect it's going to go back together pretty easily as well.
How hard was it to take it apart, and what did it take?
It was actually fairly straightforward. It scored an 8 out of 10 on a repairability scale, and that's because there was very little adhesive.
8 out of 10?
That's extremely high. Yeah. Way higher than I expected.
Yeah, our most recent iPhones actually scored 7 out of 10, so that definitely says something about the Switch.
Yeah. So you could take it apart is that a regular screwdriver, or do you need a special head?
Most of them are regular screws. All the external screws, though, are Nintendo's infamous tri-point screws.
Ah,
so there's lobes instead of four on them.
Okay.
And it's interesting, because those are the same security screws that Apple's now using inside their iPhone.
I presume you have that head in your iFixit kits, right?
Yep, I came prepared. It's right here.
Yeah. We love those iFixit kits because, in fact, that's what we gave all our hosts for Christmas because we know they're taking things like this apart. Yeah.
I missed out on that.
I know. Next year.
Well, I've got a few questions. You know, in this teardown, what did you learn about the Switch that you didn't know before? I'm specifically thinking about this Bluetooth controller. The Joy-Cons and extra controllers connect via Bluetooth, but yet the Switch won't connect to Bluetooth wireless headphones, which is just driving me nuts.
Yeah, that's a really interesting feature, and I would really hope that they can fix that with a software update, like an over-the-air update, because it does have a Broadcom Bluetooth chip that should be able to support that functionality. It seems like maybe they just didn't address that in the first iteration, but as you guys know, there's other issues as well that we're hoping Nintendo is addressing.
Well, like this left Joy-Con problem, what's going on there?
So there's a couple different theories right now. To give your viewers some background, people are saying they're having connectivity issues with their left Joy-Con. And while some people can walk 30 feet away and use it with no problem, other people are saying within 5 feet, it just conks out. There's two main theories behind this. People are saying that A, it's being caused by the size and location of the antenna, which seems okay at first. If you compare the two Joy-Cons, I have the left one right here, the blue one. And then I have the right one, which is kind of disassembled. The key difference being that the right Joy-Con has its own separate antenna that enables NFC, but the left antenna is actually built into the board right here. And people are saying just the size and location is causing connectivity issues, but I think Nintendo engineered it a little bit better than that. There's a second theory is if we stop on this picture right here, you'll see a little solder blob on the left Joy-Con, which is unfortunately on the right in this image. But people are saying that it might not be properly applied, or there's some cases where the quality control wasn't tight enough.
Oh, so the soldering got in the way is one theory.
Where's the solder blob? It's on the blue part on the right?
It's on the blue Joy-Con if you look below and to the right of the analog stick.
Okay. Oh, I see the solder blob.
Right,
yeah. Big old silvery thing. You think that might be blocking the antenna?
I don't think it's blocking it. I think we spoke to some folks at Creative Electron, and they said that sometimes if there's like a last-minute change or some nth-hour addition, they'll actually leave open spaces on the board to add in like filters to the RF system. So it's possible that instead of putting a component there, they just close that connection with the solder blob, and it's possible that in some cases it was not fully connected.
So is this the sort of thing that – you know, Nintendo hasn't quite come out and acknowledged that this is a problem. They have said that they're looking into it and that, you know, hopefully they'll find some fixes if there are issues. But clearly, there's a lot of folks on the internet talking about this. So does this look like the sort of thing that could be fixed easily in future hardware versions? Or are we just all kind of SOL here? Because I haven't experienced it personally, but a lot of folks are complaining about this.
I would really hope so. You know, there's a YouTuber out there who actually went ahead and fixed it on his own by actually soldering a separate antenna onto that solder blob.
Oh, wow. Wow. That's something most people aren't going to do. Right?
Yeah.
But so it worked, which is interesting. So that solder blob is covering up, probably, in your opinion, covering up a connector that was left there for adding something.
Yeah, or it's just closing a connection that would have otherwise they may have pulled out a component, or they may have thought about putting a component that they're actually not using.
So maybe they will put an antenna in there in future versions, or interesting.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Interesting.
How about the dock? You discovered that it's really just a USB-C hub with an HDMI port. You could buy one of those.
It's basically just a cheap piece of plastic, right?
I mean, yeah. if you got it included, no big deal. But people are going to buy these on the aftermarket if they didn't or they break it for $90.
Yeah, they're pretty pricey.
Yeah, especially if you want to set up with more than one TV in your home, that you're looking at, it's going to add up pretty quickly. But essentially, the entire dock is this board right here, which is home to two USB ports, USB-C, and the HDMI out. That's all it is. It's a board this big. Everything else is just plastic.
Could I go to Monoprice and get a USB-C to HDMI adapter? Would that work?
It's possible. I haven't tried it out myself.
Unless they put firmware in to block it, or
something like that, which they very well might have. But there's no performance advantages that the dock adds or anything like that. No extra processing power or nothing.
No, I don't believe so. In fact, before the Switch was actually released, I was reading online about rumors and patents, and people were saying there would at least be a fan or some sort of cooling inside the dock, but there's nothing. This is the internal of the dock. Wow. It's just that.
It's a plastic thing.
Plastic thing, and then this little spring-loaded.
I do want to do – somebody's got a mod where they put some felt on the inside there so it doesn't scratch the screen. Yeah. I do like that idea. That might be a good mod.
That's probably pretty useful.
Yeah. Yeah. So how repairable? You said 8 out of 10. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That means if something breaks, people will be able to bring it somewhere or do it themselves.
Yeah. Ideally, they'll do it themselves. But, you know, we want to be sure people who are doing these repairs have access to parts, have the right tools on hand, and instructions so they can do it correctly.
How is the part situation? Is Nintendo offering parts to third-party repair?
As of today, no, not really. Okay. We can wait and see. Obviously, when a new device comes out, it takes time for parts to proliferate throughout the market.
Right.
But I imagine in the case with other popular consumer electronics, we will start seeing parts appear, especially for devices repairable as this one.
Does most of the components, do they look like off-the-shelf parts, or is there a lot of custom things here? I guess, you know, how much are we going to have to rely on Nintendo for that?
Unfortunately, I'd say a lot of these are pretty specific components made for the Switch. Right off the bat, the batteries are obviously custom made by Nintendo and custom designed, and those are components that you're going to have to change after 2 years. The fan might be off the shelf. The speakers might be off the shelf. I'm looking at this cartridge reader and headphone jack, which is obviously a notoriously vulnerable component.
Yep.
That's probably going to be custom. You're going to probably have to go out and source it.
Maybe,
carefully.
Though, after a while, there'll be some of these on eBay you can buy for parts. You never know, right?
Hopefully, yeah.
The other thing people are worried about is, as we mentioned, is the dock scratching the screen. How hard is that going to be to get a replacement for?
I don't know. The digitizer, it's really hard to say. I've never seen a digitizer exactly like this, but it's a pretty – digitizers are fairly generic components.
Okay.
It's interesting they have these notches cut out at the bottom. And those actually serve a couple purposes. One, they're ports for the speakers, and two, they're actually air intake for the thermal management.
That's kind of smart.
Yeah, which I found out the other day. It's pretty. I will say the thermal management is pretty cleverly designed in this thing.
So you can see there are these two notches on either side right here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, that's interesting.
So one of the things that Nintendo has going for it, and I think most gamers know this, is their hardware just lasts forever. Like you can play an original, Nintendo Entertainment System from 1985 today. In most cases, it kind of works. You might have to blow in the cartridge or whatever, but it's going to work for you. Given that this is essentially a tablet, will this have that same longevity or not?
I really hope so. A lot of the things that it relies on is just the HDMI standard sticking around and the batteries lasting. I'd say that's the two major ones. HDMI is obviously not going anywhere, or at least it will be backwards compatible for a long time. And as long as people have access to batteries to replace in their Switches, I think I can see this console lasting 5, maybe 10 years. 20 years might be a stretch, though, just because, it is a digital device.
That's great news.
Devices like this tend to follow Moore's Law.
How about the CPU? What's the CPU in there? Is that a stock CPU or is that a proprietary Nintendo?
It's NVIDIA's – it's a customized version of NVIDIA's Tegra X1.
Oh, interesting.
It's the same –
as in the Shield, which we're going to show in a little bit. Yeah.
So
somebody said that this is really kind of almost a proprietary Shield tablet in some respects.
You could say that. I haven't done too much research into the Shield itself.
It's interesting.
It's a good choice.
It's a fast chip, right? It's a great chip.
NVIDIA really seems to be on the cutting edge of a lot of stuff with mobile, you know, self-driving cars. I mean, they're a company that's making some waves, and it's kind of nice to see Nintendo actually, you know, make a smart decision on that end.
Evan, great to talk to you. Evan Noronha is a technical writer at iFixit. Of course, iFixit is a sponsor of some of our shows. We love them, but we always like to get these teardowns on because I think you learn a lot when you look at what's inside this stuff. You can read all about it at iFixit.com. Thank you, Evan.
Absolutely. Thanks for having
me. Have a great day. We're going to take a look at some very high-end in-ear headphones, probably as good as you can get from Odyssey. They're known for their high-end components. And a $4,000 No Man's Sky machine. Is it any better than my NVIDIA Shield? We'll see.
I sure hope so.
We'll see. I only paid $150 for that. But first, let's talk about cooking. Have we given you a Blue Apron box yet?
No, but every time I hear the ad,
we're going to get you one of these. We're going to get you one. We get one every week. So Blue Apron, it delivers you fresh ingredients, including the meat and the fish, every bit you need, all the pieces you need, and a recipe card to make an amazing meal, either for two or for a family. And I love it. You know, the last thing you want to do when you get home from work is plan a meal, go shopping, get all the ingredients, come home and cook it. But if the Blue Apron box is on your doorstep when you get home and you've got everything you need and you're half an hour away from an amazing meal, it's actually fun. You sit down and cook it. Everybody in the family goes, "What's that? What are you making? This smells incredible." And they're really exciting recipes. Buffalo-style chicken drumsticks or oven-baked chicken tenders or crispy fish tacos. You go on the site. The delivery is not automatic, so you're not going to get a box when you don't want them. You go on the site. You pick the meals you want from their weekly menus. By the way, the menus repeat no more than once a year, so there's always something different and interesting. You use ingredients you probably never tried before. And here's the thing I love. I assumed, well, this has got to cost me, right? This is going to be more. The grocery store is 60% more expensive than Blue Apron because Blue Apron doesn't have the overhead. So you're saving money. You're getting great meals, less than $10 a person, all the ingredients you want. You're getting some great cooking skills, and you're having fun. In fact, Blue Apron families cook together much more often than non-Blue Apron families. This is a great way to get your kids excited about cooking. No weekly commitment. Customize your recipes. Take a look at what's on the menu this week, like salmon piccata with orzo and broccoli. They have vegetarian choices like vegetable chili and baked sweet potatoes with crispy tortilla strips, spicy shrimp coconut curry. Oh, this is the one I want with cabbage and rice. Look at this. Go to blueapron.com/NSS. You'll get three meals free with your first purchase, plus, of course, free shipping. Blueapron.com/NSS. I'm sorry they don't ship to Hawaii and Alaska, about 99% of the continental United States.
Pretty much everywhere else.
Yeah, we have a Hawaiian listener. I want my Blue Apron! Sorry, they want it to get to you fresh, right? Blueapron.com/NSS, and we thank them for the support of the new Screen Savers. Jason Howell is a musician. You know Jason. You work with Jason.
Oh, yeah.
Great guy.
Definitely.
And he's like got the golden ears in the Twit family. You might, too. You young guys, you can hear stuff. He, last week, you remember, tried those great Hi-Fi Man planar magnetic headphones. Planar magnetic's an older technology, but people, audiophiles, it makes an incredible, open, warm reproduction. Could you do the same thing in ear-to-ear headphones? Let's find out. The Audacy iSign 10s with Jason Howell. Watch.
I'm here with the Audacy iSign 10 headphones. These little guys are in-ear headphones. Although I say little, they're actually pretty big for in-ear headphones. Audacy is a pretty great audiophile brand name. These are $400 in-ear headphones, and they're using the planar magnetic technology that I took a look at last week with the Hi-Fi Man over-the-ear headphones. This is like the same thing, but in an in-ear format. So you can take a look at the design. I mean, because of the planar magnetic technology, it requires the flat plate. So it ends up being kind of a wide style in-ear headphone, a lot larger than you're probably used to putting into your ears. Very bizarre design. These are the first in-ear headphones to employ that planar magnetic driver technology. Open back design, so you're going to get a little bit of audio leakage when you use these. Has a standard 3.5 millimeter cable, which is what I was using with my Android device. But if you do happen to have an iPhone, it comes with this, which is the lightning cable for your iPhone. This actually has a built-in DAC for improved gain on the audio output. It also enhances the sound, so you're going to get louder sound out of the headphones when you use it on an iPhone versus when you use it on Android. But I didn't see that holding me back at all in my testing with this at all. It really sound super nice. Many over-the-ear hook options. They're interchangeable, as you can see there. A ton in there that you can just kind of find the one that's most comfortable and, you know, find the one that fits, which could be a little bit of a challenge. They're kind of strange. I'll go ahead and try and put one on right now. You kind of have to slide it over your ear and then pop it into it. And, I mean, there it is. It's big. There's no getting around it. It's big, but that's making room for the technology. And when you first play audio, I mean, the sound quality is just, it's so nice. You know, it's the clarity that I heard in the Hi-Fi Man, but miniaturized. That's what it's all about, right? A similar transient response, which is one of my favorite things about this planar magnetic technology, especially in the high frequency content, nice and snappy. Again, clarity in the mids, nice definition in the lows, not super overemphasized or enhanced. And I would say maybe the lows were a little bit less impressive on these. You didn't get that kind of booming sound because of the smaller form factor in your ears, but still very nicely defined. With most in-ear headphones, like I said, you have to kind of push them in. These you don't. You snap them into your ears and you hear exactly what you want to hear, but they're not isolating. These are not the kind of in-ear headphones that are going to block the outside sound. It's almost like you get an even mix of what you're hearing outside of the headphones along with what you're hearing within. And that can be nice, but there are environments where that's not, you know, desirable. If you're in a, you know, you're probably going to want a private listening environment because you're going to be leaking sound all over the place. These are definitely the best sounding in-ear headphones I've ever experienced. A bit more value for iOS users, like I said, because of the included DAC and the Lightning support. Though I would say the big downside here is that they're not super practical for a whole lot of scenarios that I would personally use in-ear headphones for. You might think twice about taking these on a plane. People are going to hear them. Taking these to the gym, they're kind of big and heavy. Shared office environment, again, you know, public transportation. People are going to hear the sound leaking through the open air back design. And so you'll want to keep that in mind. Not to mention, they're pricey. They're $399. But if what you want is the best sounding headphones that are in-ear technology and they're rocking this new, you know, this planar magnetic technology, the first ones to do that, then I don't think you can get any better than the Odyssey iSign 10 headphones for $399. My name is Jason Howell. You can catch me all over the Twit Network, of course. Tech News Today every weekday. Also all about Android and Android App Arena. And occasionally, just sometimes, reviewing products on new screensavers.
When he's wearing those, I want him to tap it and go, all hailing frequencies are open, Captain. I mean, really, those look like Uhuru's headsets.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I love planar magnetic. I mean, mm-hmm. they really sound mm-hmm. good. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. you know, they're a little bit bulky. I am playing No Man's Sky on my No Man's Sky computer, which is this little tiny thing. You're actually going to review the new one.
Yeah, which has 4K, HDR, all that good stuff.
I just turned it off. Don't touch it.
I forgot it had the touch capacitive button.
Oh,
there.
Man, I got to relaunch my game now. I keep dying in this game.
That's so, how good this is.
This sits in my home theater setup. Mm. It's the NVIDIA Shield. It's an Android TV device.
/ gaming console.
Well, and that's what's interesting about it, because I play No Man's Sky on this mm-hmm. because it has GeForce Now, which is a streaming gaming
system. Where when I play No Man's Sky, I'm playing on a PlayStation 4 Pro.
That's how it first came out, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
you said it looks pretty similar to your PlayStation.
Yeah, actually, I've been surprised watching you play through this here. There's not really any dropped frames, not a lot of lag. I'm pretty impressed.
Well, obviously, you can do a lot better, because on the line with us right now, Blake Patterson, who co-founded Touch Arcade way back when, and with Arnold Kim of Mac Rumors. Mm-hmm. TouchArcade.com was a great gaming site. Was that 1998? Has it been that long?
98, yeah. It's been 9 years.
Holy cow.
So
well, welcome.
That was the year the App Store went live. So
you're no punter when it comes to gaming. I mean, you're pretty serious about gaming.
Yeah, I mean, I started probably with my first console back in about 1980. I got the Atari VCS, and And then I got a TI home computer after that, and then it went from there. But I never stopped gaming, and it was obviously the interest in gaming is what pushed me to take Arnold up on his offer to go in together with an iOS gaming site. And as you can see from the photo they just showed, I've got a collection of, I'm a big retro computing fan, so
that's
I
your house?
Spend a lot of,
I thought it was a museum. Yeah,
no.
Goals right there. I thought this was like the tech museum in San Jose. That's your house?
I love it.
Yeah, that's the my 10-year-old daughter. She's afraid she's going to get caught in the
cage. You have a family?
I do have a family. It's amazing.
Yeah, your wife lets you do this. This is the best man cave I ever saw in my life.
Thanks, Leo. The thing about the retro computers down there, though, is I mean they're all set up and functional. I don't see much value in collecting and then shelving just to have.
Got an Apple
they all work,
too,
but the thing is they're not that expensive. I mean most of them you can get. These come from eBay and a system unit on it might be like $40 or
something.
What
is that
like
you're playing Joust on there?
Let's see, Joust. That's a Atari 520ST.
The ST, So you have a Joust cartridge in there. Wow.
No, it's actually floppy based.
Oh, it's floppy.
Oh, okay. It's amazing how, it's just a good reminder of how big computers used to be.
So this puts it all in context then when we say that you like No Man's Sky so much that you actually built a dedicated $4,000 PC to play it.
Well, I should clarify the hardware combination of hardware. And as I went through it, I ended up purchasing a few different displays because I started out on the PS4. But the hardware side of it is a little over $3,000, and then the rest is
monitors.
I mean, there's actually
old memorabilia.
The memorabilia. I grabbed some and brought it here by the webcam.
Got?
Like, well, for instance, there's the 65 Days of Static did a LP, a record LP version of the soundtrack. And there's the nice little diecast model of the ship, which is part of this Explorer's Edition version of the game. That kind
I
of
feel
stuff.
Like such a punter because I'm playing this on a $150 TV set. Basically,
I was giving myself credit for streaming the soundtrack on Apple Music. This guy has it on vinyl.
Now, both Nathan and I have the same complaint as I think a lot of people do with No Man's Sky. It just seems to be a lot of No Man's Sky was a highly hyped title.
Yes.
The thing that was most interesting about it was you're in a universe of billions of computer-generated planets, each unique with a unique flora and fauna. I'm wandering right now on the moon. In fact, you can see if I look up somewhere. Yeah, there's the planet that's behind the moon. I mean, it's a breathtakingly beautiful game. But you spend a lot of time. See, there's the planet. I was just on that planet, and I decided to fly to the moon. But you spend a lot of time wandering around on this
game. Yeah, it gets a bit repetitive. It's a bit of a grind. It's a gorgeous game, but you're pretty much alone in the universe, aside from, I guess, the animals and creatures you run into. But what are we missing?
A few aliens.
What are we missing? Because online, on Twitter and things like this, you've kind of turned into an evangelist for the game of sorts. And clearly there's something that you're getting that we might not be.
Yeah. What is it? What's the story?
I think, and part of it, maybe for me, my particular situation is that I started gaming so long ago. There are games that try to simulate, space scenarios and for instance, Elite was one of the early space trading games. And now that's, of course, been redone as Elite Dangerous. And there's other planets, other games. One in particular, I made a video about its Lucasfilm, before it was called LucasArts, actually created a game called Rescue on Fractalus. And that was a extremely primitive game where you were flying. Well, there, I think you're seeing it on the screen, where it was simulating a planetscape with just a handful of lines on a screen. But it gave you the feeling that you were flying around a planet, and this was technology from 1984, 1983, crude, but it felt like a planet. And I used to spend hours flying around that and, shooting the aliens and rescuing the downed pilots.
So you like this genre, and this is so much better than that, right? I mean, this is fully realized, in that
respect.
What
I like about the Fractalus game is that, the world is mathematically generated, and it's endless. There's no stop. It's exactly the same with No Man's Sky. Every feature, every rock, every mountain, all the water, it's all mathematically generated. Each planet has a formula that renders it, and whoever were to land on that planet would see the same, same exact features in the exact same places. And given that it's a, mathematical situation, there's basically a limitless number of variations that can happen. And so to me, it makes these worlds feel like feel very real. I mean, they're mathematically real. And so walking around them, flying around them, exploring them, and their different types of, you know, the environments, the caves, the different flora and fauna, it feels very, while it feels very, very much a situation of solitude, it does, you know, it feels like around the next corner, you don't know what you're going to discover. And that's a exciting feeling for me. And definitely, I think people that were disliking the game because they had believed it would be much more of a, you know, online MMO type game are obviously are not, you know, into the whole solitude thing. You know, I'll speak to that. When I first heard of the game a little over a year after it launched, what I took in from, you know, the trailers and what I heard from, you know, Hello Games interviewing, you know, I didn't get the impression that there was going to be people, like actual MMO type players.
That was the reason I think people were initially upset, was that they kind of thought this was an MMO, a massively multiplayer online game.
Yeah.
The expectations, and I guess it may even be, but it's such a giant universe, you don't run into people.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, there was a particular conversation sometime before the release where it was indicated that, you know, the two people could be in the same place, but the universe is so vast that it would basically never happen. You know, and then there was mention of, you know, multiple person interactions being handled by way of some sort of a lobby. And I think really that's what they've effectively implemented or begun to implement with the recent updates. And there have been two major updates to the game since it launched that brought a lot of new features. They brought, you know, the ability to leave messages and labels in different planets that other people can find.
Oh, that's interesting.
I think that may go towards the lobby situation. But There are interviews where, you know, the developers were saying, like, if you want to play, you know, a big action MMO, go play Destiny. You know, that's not what this is. And so I never really was misled, I guess, as other people seem to have been.
You're happy just to wander around on these planets and
in solitude,
looking for. I mean, we're looking at some YouTube video, which makes it much more interesting than it really is. Because mostly what I do is I've been wandering planets for weeks. Like, okay, here's an example. It says radio signal detected. Find source of life signs. It's 22 minutes of walking this way, and so that means for the next 22 minutes in real time of this game, I'm going to be walking towards this thing, and not much will happen between now and then.
Well, I think for situations like that, I mean, to talk specifically about what you're mentioning.
Should I
here,
be doing this?
Well, I mean, I would jump in the ship and fly over there.
Oh.
It would take about.
Well, my ship's all like half an hour away that way. I've been walking so long.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of, right, you get out into the middle of nowhere, right, which is closer, that kind of thing.
And I'm supposed to collect resources and build things. There's a lot of. It feels like World of Warcraft, but without any NPCs. Oh, a knowledge stone. What's that? Should I interact with that?
Let's see. Yes, you should.
Sure, you.
I've learned a Gek word for destroy. Now, is that going to help me in any way?
Well, part of the game involves interacting with
aliens.
You know, AI-based aliens, and when you have conversations with them, they say a little spiel, and it's entirely foreign in language.
Right.
But the more and more words you collect, then parts of those sentences that they say end up being English words. So you can better understand where they're coming from, which is, you know, it's a little angle on the interaction and trading, but it doesn't make a huge difference, I have to say.
Well, it sounds like you're the perfect fan for this game. You understand, you know, where the developers are coming from. You have a nostalgic tie to this genre. But take me through your process in actually getting to that point where you built the ultimate No Man's Sky setup. Because you started out playing just on a PlayStation 4 like I am, right?
Yeah. It's I was glad, by the way, to see, I'll say up front, that there's a huge, you know, PS4 Pro utilization with that new update that landed about 10 days ago. So that's nice to see. But yeah, I started playing on launch day with my PlayStation 4. And I, you know, fell in love with the game right away. I was playing on the entertainment center on the couch, you know.
Yep, and that's what I've been doing.
After a few weeks, I wanted to, you know, have it feel more like a, you know, sit down simulation where I could get, you know, more engaged. And so I wanted to play it on a desk.
You wanted to be a little bit more immersed in the world.
Yeah, when this came out, I thought this would be the ultimate VR game. I'm a little disappointed that they didn't go in that direction, frankly.
I think I would imagine that VR is coming for it, given the two updates that have come that have been equally spaced since the release have been pretty feature rich, and I've got to think that they're going to bring VR to it. But I guess
then at least you're in the environment, you know, and you can look around, because a lot of this is how pretty it is, and you know, you're kind of the space that you're in and all of that. Here I am in a cave. I'm coming out of the cave.
So what did moving to the desk do for you? Did that make it much more immersive?
I picked up a curved 32-inch screen, which added
immersion. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it really makes a nice, it adds a little depth, certainly.
Yeah.
And so I was playing it on the desk like that, and it was a dramatic improvement. It was much more, it felt much more immersive in that configuration versus, you know, across the room. But I was still, you know, this was still PS4. I brought the PS4 down onto the table, and I was playing like that. And then I started, you know, thinking, well, you know, I'm enjoying it so much, and it's so visual. Here, this is 30 frames a second, you know, with PC hardware, I could put together a system that could play at 60 frames a second or faster. You know, I could take advantage of mods. There's a big modding community out there that allows a lot of variations on what happens. And also, you can edit the settings files on the PC version, so you could do certain things like change the field of view, just little things that make the experience a little better on the PC by nature of it being, you know, file based. So after two more weeks or so on the desk with the PS4, I decided to go ahead and, you know, it's been 18 years since I built a PC. I used to build them a lot, but now I've been on the Mac all this time. So I figured out what is what out there and then put together a list, ordered the parts, built it. And it's really been, it's been a great jump. I mean, 60 frames a second in the game, being able to tweak the configs. I've not actually gone down the mod road, even though that was part of my initial reasoning, because while it, you know, kind of changes things up a bit, it's sort of an experience different than the core game experience. And for now, I just kind of want to, you know, stay on the path that, you know, that the developers have envisioned. And
how many hours a day do you play No Man's Sky?
Well, I mean, early on, it was quite a few. I mean, I would, you know, put an hour in the morning before work, or then after, you know, my daughter, wife go to bed, I'd come down and play a little bit more. I've played a total of, I looked at my Steam profile. It's about 450 hours since early August. And
I don't think I've ever
that's
put
a lot of
and how many planets have you named or discovered?
I haven't named them all yet, but I did count for one of the articles I wrote, and I think now I've landed on probably 550 planets, maybe.
Okay. Wow,
something like that.
So you're very aggressive in exploring the planets. What's your advice to somebody who wants to enjoy this game more and get the most out of it?
Well, I think, you know, there is a big range of you know, environment types, and some are more interesting than others. You know, some are very bare and they can be somewhat bland, but then there's other ones that the same bare type of planet will have an eerie, eerie atmospheric effect that makes it pleasant to walk around, or you might want to, you know, rather walk around a jungle planet. So I would not spend a lot of time on planets that weren't, you know, particularly interesting. I would pretty quickly move on to the next one. And, you know, I think just seeing what's out there one after the other.
Explore.
Yeah, it has kept it nice and varied. And, you know, I think earlier, before the show actually began, we were talking about, you know, tips on, you know, how to build up your character. I think, you know, one of the early things I did was sort of grab a bit of everything from the environment, mining elements, then take it, sell it, and see what I figured out early on what was more valuable.
Yes.
And then I started to, you know, go after those. And this was in an effort to acquire, you know, a ship. And then I learned that you can actually, you can get just basically fly around the surface of a planet if you've got some time. Like in an hour, you can probably find a couple of crashed ships and pick them up without having to pay. So that's another aspect.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah,
should you feed the animals?
if you feed the animals, they get smiley facey, but they also...
See that? He just hit me. Should I kill the animal?
You can kill the animals if you want. It's depends on how well you're going to sleep at night.
First.
But if you feed them,
they'll leave a air element on the ground.
You're going to die.
Which is actually
get out of here. Getting out of here. So at what point did you realize how much you had spent on this whole ultimate setup? or was that part of the plan the whole time, or was it kind of slippery slope?
It wasn't part of the plan. I think I knew that I was going to spend, you know, a couple of thousand dollars, and you know, when I started off, I guess I didn't realize I was going to purchase various screens to up the resolution and that kind of thing. And
it's not wasted though, because you could play any game on it, right?
Yeah. I mean,
you can, and that's, you know, the reason that, and I, this is something I underscored, I think, in my original write. The piece that you saw at Polygon, I mentioned the price that I pay, not as a, you know, way to say, oh, look, you know, I can spend, I've got all this cash to spend, you know, it's great.
I'm trying to
point out that, like, if a guy can, you know, enjoy this game to such a degree that he'd spend that money, maybe, you know, there's something to it beyond what, you know, all this vitriol that flies around the web from even people that have never played it. So I was just trying to kind of use that as a as an underscoring, tool.
And how's the feedback been for you for that? Are people saying, no, actually the game sucks? Or are people saying, hey, you're right, I'm seeing it from a different perspective?
Actually, comments that I see on website comment trails are surprisingly positive. People are, I'm not liking the game, or I don't. You know, it doesn't seem great to me, but, you know, go after what you like. And that's nice. But, there's some subreddits, in one particular on Reddit, and it's known to be pretty churny, and especially early on. And, I've definitely gotten some
haters,
yeah, from there. And
do you think you're done? Are you going to spend more? Where can you go from here?
I'm telling you, VR, baby.
I think Leo mentioned it with VR. Yeah, yeah. I mean, if eventually I would have to go VR. And when I built the system, I knew that I was wanting it to be VR capable at some point, thinking that this would that it would be available in VR. And another thing I wanted to mention though. Going back to the fact that I was, highlighting the fact that it was $4,000 spent on No Man's Sky, is, to clarify that, all I use the machine for basically is No Man's Sky. I'm not a Windows guy. I have a Mac sitting next to it on the desk that I use for everything other than gaming. And I've installed a few other games on the system, but I've probably maybe 15 hours that I've spent outside of No Man's Sky on the PC. So that's why I feel it's not, incorrect to say that this was spent on No Man's Sky.
You're not doing Excel spreadsheets or you're for a living, you do web design, right? Full stack web development.
Yeah, front end, back end web development. Yeah. I use my machine of preference for that, which also is a Mac. I like the Unix command line tools for that. So. Right.
Well, yeah. I'm going to get back into No Man's Sky, man. I'm going to, and it sounds like the base advice is explore as much as possible, get around and see other things. I've spent way too long on this moon.
I think definitely I'll land on a planet, and if it doesn't look like something that's going to give me an hour of interesting exploration, I'll just pick up and go to the next one. I will say that one thing that isn't obvious, but after you play a while, you pick it up. The moons in the planet, in the systems, there are planets, and then there are moons around some of the planets. The moons seem to be dramatically more visually.
Yeah, I'm
stunning.
On a moon right now, and I much prefer it to that horrible planet that it's.
Phrase is never skip the moons. Always skip the moons.
Don't skip the moons.
Don't skip the moons. But
words to live by. Yeah. Truly. Yeah.
Yes. Yes.
Blake, it's a pleasure meeting you, and thank you for. I'm sorry you take so much guff for your love of No Man's Sky. Every man should have
quite all right.
Should be have the right to pursue his happiness in any way, however boring. You could be collecting bottle caps. I mean,
I have enough other things going on in life that I'm able to soldier on despite
the disapproval of Reddit, huh?
Yeah, it's somehow I've managed.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Great to talk to you, Blake Patterson. And the website is, do you want to plug that website?
Sure. BiteSeller.com is my typically a retro computing blog if I'm not blogging about No Man's Sky. About the only thing I write about that's not to do with retro computing. But BiteSeller.com and yeah, I'm Blakespot on Twitter. So if anyone wants to send some hate my way, I'm right here.
I'm really glad we got you on because we couldn't get a hold of you, and now I realize it's because you were playing No Man's Sky. Makes sense.
Well, that's
you were busy.
Problem. It is one of the problems.
Blake, it's great to talk to you. Thank you for joining
us. Well, thanks for having me.
I appreciate it. And, you know, you're going to play a little more?
Definitely. I mean, I that's aspirational goals right there. I mean, like, the level of dedication and the know-how and wherewithal to build that out, I mean, it's really impressive. It looks like a lot of fun. So, yeah, I'm going to give it another shot.
And honestly, you can play it on the PlayStation 4. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. If you don't already have one, maybe you could get an NVIDIA Shield. You're going to be reviewing these. I think this is one of my favorite new set-top boxes.
Yeah, and this is about half the price of the PS4 Pro that I got.
Yeah,
so.
And I'm playing it through GeForce Now, which is NVIDIA's streaming gaming service. And as you can see, it's very playable.
Yeah, I was actually surprised. You know, I've only ever really kind of tooled around with GeForce Now, never spent a ton of time with it, but that was a while ago, and it wasn't that great back then. And PlayStation Now also has been kind of hit or
miss.
You
need a lot of bandwidth. I mean, this is
it looks like it's gotten a lot better.
We're on a very fast gigabit connection.
Well, there's that too.
But at home, I'm only about 100 megabits, and it plays just as smoothly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know what the frame rate is or what the resolution is. It's probably only 1080p, but it looks great. I think it looks fine.
Looks damn good.
Yeah. And it's certainly playable. So, I'm happy. I'm happy. Coming up in just a little bit, a caller who is not happy with his Wi-Fi calling. We'll talk about that in just a second. But first, a word from our sponsor, Rocket Mortgage, from the folks at Quicken Loans, one of the best mortgage lenders in the country. And if you go to Quicken Loans' website, quickenloans.com/NSS, you'll see all those J.D. Power Customer Satisfaction Awards year after year, number one in customer satisfaction. So it's a great lender. I mean, they're transparent, but they're great, too, because they're very technologically savvy. And that means they've got a product for us geeks who don't want to go into a bank to get a home loan or to refi. We don't want to, you know, bring boxes of paperwork in. We'd like to do it all online. And you can. Quicken Loans calls it Rocket Mortgage, and it's going to lift the burden. Get it? Lift the burden of getting a home loan. When it comes to choosing a mortgage lender, you got to work with someone you can trust, someone who's going to make it easy on you, has your best interest in mind. And there's nothing better than Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. It's transparent. It's online. You can even submit the paperwork, things like your check statements or your pay stubs, online with a touch of a button. So they have little sliders on there. You can adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time. So you get the solution that's just right for you. And the best part is, because it's all online, you get approved in minutes. In minutes. Now, last time we bought a house, it took us 6 weeks to get the loan. Minutes, my friends. So you could actually be at an open house. Maybe you're going to go to open houses tomorrow. Do a little looky-looing. What if you say, hey, we ought to buy this? Just remember this, quickenloans.com/NSS. You can get approved before you leave. quickenloans.com/NSS. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030. We thank Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans for their support of the new screensavers. We're going to do Wi-Fi calling in just a bit. Last week, Kevin Rose was in studio. You all know Kevin from the original, some of you know Kevin from the original screensavers. He hates it. But he hates it. But he was given the title, the Dark Tipper, because the executive producer at the time, Paul Block of the Screensaver, says, because Kevin was like 20, you're a young kid. You could be giving us all those dark tips. So we thought, Kevin, we're going to make you suffer. And we asked him for a dark tip. One.
Hey, everybody. Kevin Rose here, a.k.a. the Dark Tipper. It is good to be back. I have a messaging app for you today that I think you're going to love. If you're a little paranoid like me, you're probably going to want to use this. This is Signal, and this is an open source messaging app that is developed for both iOS and Android. It doesn't require any login. You don't need a username or password or any pins or anything like that. All you need is your phone number and your existing address book. It's pretty simple to use. Everything is, of course, secure and encrypted. You can send group texts. You can send pictures, video messages. And also, they have added private calling, so you can make crystal clear phone calls between two people and not worry about any eavesdropping or anything else like that. The one thing I love about this app is that it is endorsed by Edward Snowden. He says, use anything by Open Whisper Systems. So go check it out. It's on Android and iOS.
Oh, yeah.
Signal. It's the only one. That's the one everybody uses.
Signal's fantastic.
Love Signal. In fact, the recent CIA Vault 7 revelations, it's some news organization's got it wrong and said Signal's been cracked, WhatsApp's been cracked, Telegram's...
Nope.
They had to get on your phone and get it before you encrypted it with Signal, which... In a way, in fact, the folks at Open Whisper Systems tweeted this, in a way, is really good news. It means that the CIA has to resort to these targeted, expensive, risky attacks of getting on people's phones because they can't crack Signal.
Yeah, and Signal, the same sort of encryption technology that Signal uses is what WhatsApp uses.
Right.
So
Open,
both great options.
Open Whisper Systems. Are you ready? We could do a call for help.
Let's do it.
You want to do it?
Yeah.
We got it's a recording from Mark in Pittsville, Wisconsin. Mark.
So, in a nutshell, Verizon finally offered Wi-Fi calling. I don't have a signal where I live, and it's been a bit problematic since I've been using it. I've had more trouble with Galaxy Samsung phones than I've had with an Apple iPhone. But the biggest problem I'm having at the moment is when I'm talking to someone. Occasionally, there will be just a little bit of a delay, and then the speech takes a moment to catch up. It's almost like it sounds like it's buffering, and it can be really difficult to communicate like that, and I wondered if what factors might be in order to make this a little more practical to use on a day-to-day basis.
So, great question,
yeah, super
Mark.
Super tough problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's your Wi-Fi, so... You know, first of all, you have to have a phone that supports it. As you said, the iPhone supports it. The Galaxy support it. This is a Google Pixel. It supports it. Most of the modern phones support
Wi-Fi. Yeah. And the Pixel works with Project Fi, which is a fantastic service, which might be something worth considering because that will switch between Wi-Fi and cellular. Wi-Fi is the default. So if he's at home, regular calls could technically be Wi-Fi calls. And then when he leaves his house and gets a signal, then he can actually work on a cellular network. So... the Pixel is a great choice, and the new iPhones, it doesn't surprise me that he's had more success with the iPhone than the older Notes.
The real problem is Wi-Fi is only as good as your Wi-Fi calling.
Exactly.
So if you have a slow network or an unreliable network, those pauses, the latency that you're talking about, that all is typical of, you know, voice over the internet calls, you know, from anything, from Skype. From WhatsApp, from Facebook, or from Wi-Fi calling on your phone. It's not going to be any better than that, right?
No. So I think what he might need to do is if you're not going to get the cellular signal in your home and you're confined to your basement, that's where you're making most of your voice over IP calls, you're going to want to look at what your Wi-Fi situation looks like in that basement, right? So it might be having a dedicated modem and router in the basement or considering something like a mesh networking system, something...
Better Wi-Fi, in other words.
Better, yeah, blanket that spot in Wi-Fi. Or if you know that you're going to have a concentrated area, make those calls from there. But there are other options too, right?
Voice. Could somebody get us our femto silk? So if you go to Verizon and you say, I'm going to drop you, you got to make a lot of stink, right? I'm going to drop you. You suck. I'm going to go to T-Mobile. They may offer you, sometimes they call it a nano cell, a femto. The technical term is a femto cell. And what it is, it's kind of interesting, is it's a cellular radio, but it plugs into your internet. Verizon calls it a network extender, but it plugs into your internet via wired, so it eliminates the Wi-Fi problem, and it becomes a cell site. You're going to get 5 bars. Now, you're still using your internet, so if your internet is really slow, like 1.5 megabits, you may not get much better results. But if it's the Wi-Fi problem, this might give you better results because it's going to be as if you have a cell tower in your house.
Exactly.
It's what we do here because, when we don't get, for T-Mobile, which offers Wi-Fi calling, we don't get a good signal here. If you're a T-Mobile customer in our building, you get no bars. Now, I am, but most of us, we have Wi-Fi calling, and T-Mobile likes that because, in effect, even if you're in a building with no T-Mobile cell signal, you'll still be able to use T-Mobile by Wi-Fi calling. But for those of us who didn't have wet older phones, didn't have Wi-Fi calling available, we decided to get the femto cell in here. And that's actually worked pretty well. People don't know they're not getting T-Mobile. They think they're getting T-Mobile. So it's an alternative to Wi-Fi calling that helps you a little bit here. Yeah, that's it, I think. So, yeah, it's a very simple little device. I probably just broke it by taking it out.
And they work quite well. They're very effective.
Yeah. You've had experience with these?
Yeah, I've used them in the past.
The trick is you can buy them. But if you complain loud enough to your phone company, this is from T-Mobile, Verizon has their own.
They should just give it to you. They should just send it out to you because they're going to want to keep you happy. And in similar situations, if you ask for a signal booster, oftentimes if you raise enough of a stink, they'll give it to you because they want to keep your service. I mean, it's that simple.
Right.
Another option would, if it sounds like Mark might have had a landline there as well, another option would be to use Google Voice and then just forward calls onto that landline. Now, what that would do is it would ring both your landline and your cell phone.
Right.
But that might give you the option of using a voice over IP service, but having that landline reliability.
So that's what this does. This is Google Fi, as you mentioned. And I can have Google Fi use, it's kind of using Google Voice, go to up to five other numbers.
Yep.
So when somebody rings this call phone, it will ring my home. If I had a home line, which I don't, but it could ring the phone line there, it could ring the phone line here. What it actually does is rings all my other cell phones. So basically, that's a really good choice. And that's a free service. Google Voice, voice.google.com.
Yep.
Anyway, thank you. Yeah, there you go. Free phone number for life. I hope they keep this alive. I think they're going to. They seem to add some features just the other day.
It seems like it. They did a major app redesign a couple months ago for the first time in years. So it seems like there's new life in Google Voice. And as you mentioned, there's a few features the other day as well. So it doesn't seem like they're ignoring it or going to cut it. And that's refreshing because I've been using Google Voice for years, and it's really a fantastic service.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Mark. If you want to be on the show, we'd love to get your call next week. Georgia Dow is going to be in studio. I've actually never met Georgia Dow. She's been on our shows many, many, many times. But she lives in Montreal. She's in town for a conference. She said, I'll come in and do the new screensavers.
I love it.
So if you got a question for Georgia about Max, she's from iMore.com, or, you know, she's a psychotherapist, you could get some free therapy. Here's how.
Need tech help? The new screensavers are here with answers. Email your tech questions to newscreensavers@twit.tv.
We're going to go to the mailbag next, but first, Brian Burnett with the latest robotic vacuum cleaner, and this one from a very big name.
Yeah, let's see what he thinks. We all know
the new Dyson.
As humanity marches tirelessly forward to our inevitable automated doom, we might as well indulge ourselves with a few luxury robots in the meantime. Vacuuming robots are nothing new, but as the name would imply, the Dyson 360i robot has its sights set on being one of the best companions for dust busting. Inside the Dyson is a motor that spins up to a whopping 78,000 RPM, which equates to some massive sucking power in the form factor of just 9.5 inches wide by 4.75 tall. Removing the panels that gain access to the filters is simple, and underneath one of those filters is the location of the lithium-ion battery. Expect runtime to be around 50 minutes, while wireless charge time would be 2.5 hours. On the bottom of the Dyson, the tank tracks provide an impressive amount of mobility over obstacles that would flounder most other robots, and removing the full-width brush bar is a cinch. But what sets the Dyson apart is its 360i, which allows the robot to avoid obstacles and be aware of where it has cleaned. It also has two infrared headlights to help combat low-light situations, but it does work best in the light. To begin setting up the Dyson, simply unfold the docking bay, which handily has ports on either side to plug in, and my only real gripe is that the power cord is relatively short. Once fully charged, the Dyson is ready to begin. After running the Dyson a few times, it did get better and more efficient at navigating my apartment. Despite me cleaning with my own large vacuum prior, the 0.3-liter bin continued to return with a decent amount of corgi hair. On one occasion, I was awoken to the sound of vacuuming in the middle of the night, but I suspect the Dyson had run out of juice on an earlier cleaning session, and once the battery was replenished, it decided to continue. Fortunately, there is an app for iOS and Android that once you've connected the vacuum to your Wi-Fi, you'll be able to set up a schedule for cleaning times, update firmware, and activate or stop the Dyson remotely. My favorite part of the app was looking at the activity map of where my nicknamed Hippo robot had been. This helped me robot-proof my apartment by moving obstacles that might block the Dyson from doing its job. So in the end, who is this really for? At $950, it's hard to justify this luxury purchase, and it won't alleviate you from having to vacuum yourself in the nooks and crannies that are physically impossible for the vacuum to reach, But if you are the person who has a pet, like me, a corgi, and live in a single-story home, the Dyson will exterminate those annoying hair tumbleweeds that seem to amass in a single day and keep your cleaning duties to a 1 or 2 day a week affair. Also, if you ever get lonely, you can attach googly eyes and a Bluetooth speaker, allowing the DJ Dyson to suck and then bump some tunes. This has been Brian Burnett, and that's my review of the Dyson 360i robot vacuum.
All right, let's take a walk, robot. Here's the. I have to say, it's the coolest looking of the robot vacuum.
It looks like a luxury car of a robot here. I mean, yeah, you know, it kind of has that almost Bentley style.
Is it going to do something, or is it just? Oh, there it goes.
There it goes.
It's not as noisy as the Roomba. So we have two Roombas at home. My problem with the Roombas is the same that Brian was having, was if it loses its charge, it loses its... Oh, it is noisy. I take it back. I take it back. It wasn't doing anything. They would wake up in the middle of the night. And yeah. At 3 in the morning, you don't want to hear... And the Roomba makes music. It goes da-da-da-da when it starts up. Yeah. And then for some reason, our Roombas always used to get stuck. And so one night I woke up and I heard bam, bam, bam as the Roomba kept trying to get out of the out from under the dresser.
It should double as a shoe shiner.
I think it likes me. $950 is an awful lot of money.
Well, that's the thing. It's about twice as much as a Roomba, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think Brian made a really excellent point. You still have to vacuum. If you didn't have to vacuum ever, okay. But yeah. If you still have to vacuum, watch out. Those are nice shoes. By the way, those shoes are perfect. They're pristine.
Yeah, I'm a sneaker collector. So
you're one of those.
Yeah, I mean, I wear all of my shoes, but I clean them after every
you
wearing.
Do?
Yeah, I do. I have like a little toothbrush and soap. And...
Oh, my God, no.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything you want to tell us about this particular model?
This is the Jordan 3 True Blue. And
are those very precious?
They look nice.
I like this cool. Fabric.
Yeah, this is Jordan Brand's elephant print. We should be really talking about the robots.
No, but... I'm done with that. So, and I just want to mention, I have a shirt just like that.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
You know, if I would have gone into your closet
and borrowed.
Pulled out a shirt, this might have been the one I would have pulled out.
Yeah, it's pretty hot.
But I'm not going to say that I did that,
You
Leo.
Can keep that one if you like.
Thanks. Thanks.
That really looks better on you than it ever did on me, so... Anyway, so nice
Anyways,
to have you.
The
Welcome.
Robot.
Oh, the robot.
Yeah.
Well,
I'm happy to be here.
Are you going to buy one? You wouldn't buy one.
Well,
of those, would you?
I'm going to be, you know.
You got
I'm
a new apartment. You want to keep it clean.
Yeah. And in the past, I've tested out the iRobot Roombas, and I did have to vacuum a little bit less. So I did find them useful. But that problem of going off in the middle of the night is really kind of inexcusable when you're spending $900.
I agree.
So I'm not quite sure. I don't know. I'm not quite sure that this is the one I'll buy.
This one's better than the Roomba that had the app, which I really like. So you can see where it's been.
And it looks cool.
It really looks cool.
You know? It would be nice almost to see, like, Star Wars team up with someone and just, like, give me, like, a little R2-D2 or something.
That'd be
cool. Like,
BB-8.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be kind of fun. But
Lisa always liked the Roomba. She said, look, every time I clean, every day I have to clean it out, and there's stuff in it, so it must be picking up something.
Yeah, they're not doing nothing.
They're not doing nothing.
It's just if they're going off in the middle of the night waking you up.
I actually, one night, got up about 2 in the morning, picked up both Roombas, right? Put them in the garage underneath Lisa's car tires, hoping in the morning she wouldn't notice and drive right over them. She didn't. She did notice.
That's just malicious. That's just malicious.
Are you ready for the mailbag?
Let's do it.
All right. Here we go. Jeez. We got to get one of this. Can we put this on a
Roomba? Does that ever hit you in the face?
Put it on the Dyson. Yeah,
that was
really.
The most violent roll I've seen.
You can mail any mail. Go ahead.
First?
You can start. Yeah.
All right. This is from Jeffrey. He says, I am considering LastPass. However, they offer two-factor authentication. How does it work if my wife and I have separate cell phones? My wife and I have many joint accounts, so if she goes to a site, I don't want to get the same code on my cell phone and then have to text her or vice versa.
So first of all, you should get separate LastPass accounts.
That's what I was going to say. LastPass is great, and using a password manager... It is the way to go. Unless you want to have the same password for every website, which is a terrible idea, or a handful of passwords, which is also a bad idea. Like, you'll literally have a unique password everywhere you go. It's going to keep you a lot safer than whatever crummy system you're using now. But use separate accounts. Like, why share an account?
And maybe you're saying, well, but I want to share with my wife the account for the cable and stuff. And that's what Lisa and I do. There's LastPass is an excellent family sharing capability. You can have a folder that the two of you both put everything that you need to know in there. And Lisa will frequently say to me, hey, can you share the cable account with me because I want to log in or whatever. So that works great. Highly recommend it. Now, I am going to give you an answer to your question, though, about two-factor authentication. What do you use? Use Google Authenticator?
Yeah.
I want to recommend something called Authy.
Okay.
So let me explain how two-factor works in most cases. You're going to have, for your LastPass account, for your Google account, for whatever you have two-factor, a secret number. It's a very long secret number that you keep to yourself. The way the authenticator works is it knows the secret number. It knows the time of day. It hashes the two together to give you a unique six-digit code. The reason this works is because LastPass knows your special long number. It knows the time of the day, right? The time of day is consistent. Mm-hmm. And it can make the same
match.
Hash,
yeah.
And says, yes, yours matches mine. So the problem is this long secret code. When you sign up for LastPass or Google, you'll often get a QR code. You aim your authenticator at. It says, I got it. That's just the number in that QR code. It's just getting that long secret number. So here's the trick. A couple of tricks. One, the way I used to do it, don't recommend it, is save that QR code.
Save
it LastPass if you want. And then you can share it with somebody. Yeah. Remember, you want to keep it secret because that's the key. But you could save it.
Don't put it on a Post-it note on your desk or something stupid.
But the reason I did that is so that when I got a new phone, which I do every few months, I could set up Authenticator again.
Yeah.
Then I discovered something called Authy, and I want to recommend this to everybody. Authy saves your secret numbers, just like LastPass does, on the cloud, on the Authy cloud. And so if you get multiple phones, you can log into your Authy account. You'll have a password to unlock these, so it's still safe.
Nice.
And you don't have to get a new authenticator set up every time you get a new phone, or your wife's phone is different from yours. I love Authy, A-U-T-H-Y. And I have used it now, a complete replacement for any of the other authenticators, Google's authenticator or whatever.
Yeah.
And it has the advantage of you can set it up on multiple devices with the same secret code without a whole lot of rigmarole, because they keep track of the secret code for you. So highly recommend Authy. If not, share your QR code with your wife. Just got to do it carefully so that no bad guy could get it, right?
Yeah, definitely. Two-factor authentication always seems like a pain in the butt.
Oh, it's worth it.
But it's worth it every single time. The reason being, if someone does get your password, and this is why using a password manager like LastPass is so great, but if someone does in your current situation, they're not going to have that specific code that's sent to your phone or to your tablet or to your laptop or wherever it is that you have it set up. So it's going to keep you safe. It's going to just add that extra layer of security. So it might seem intimidating. It might seem like a pain in the butt, but it's always worth it.
Do it. Do it. Here's a question from Timothy. Oh, man, I know this. So my wife read me a news story about a set of headphones exploding while in flight. Did you see the pictures of that poor woman?
I did.
She was burnt on the side of her head.
Terrifying.
It got me thinking about some of the issues of lithium-ion batteries. At the end of the piece, the expert they spoke to about the incident said, a la Dirty Harry, you got to ask yourself, do I feel lucky? Well, that got me to thinking, do you, punk? Is there a consumer-based device dongle or some other thing that could be put between your charger and your lithium-ion device to control the amount of energy that goes inside? Is there anything one could do to prevent incidents like this, Timothy? So I asked the staff if we could blow up a battery, but they said no.
Well, we talked extensively about it.
We thought about how we could do it. So first of all, that device is in everything you have. If you get a well-made phone, headphones, whatever, it's got in its circuitry to keep from overcharging lithium ion. That's very dangerous. You overcharge it, it can explode.
Yeah.
So I don't know what happened with those headphones. Were they Bose? Do we know what kind of headphones they were? I don't think that the problem was that they got overcharged. Any well-made device is going to have circuitry to prevent overcharging. But other things can happen with lithium ion batteries. And this is what I wanted to show. Which is if they get punctured, they leak, which is what happened in the Note 7, then exposure to air can cause these volatile chemicals in a lithium-ion battery to heat up and explode. Now, this is what we wanted to do. But the problem with doing this, and I don't recommend this at home, he's going to take a knife to puncture the battery, is that it releases toxic chemicals into the air. See that smoke? If you were to breathe that, it would actually sear your lungs. It's very bad stuff. And I decided that would probably we're going to err on the side of caution and not do this.
Probably
but that's all it takes.
Call.
Yeah, that's all it takes. This guy's a Metallica fan. He probably can, you know, he could spare some brain cells. But you know, I love Metallica. But
he looked really pleased with himself, though.
Hey, I blew it up. But what he's doing, it can happen. And
yeah.
So we don't know. There's lots of these on YouTube. This is why we decided. Well, we don't really have to do this. Because, no, good. Take an axe to a lithium-ion battery. What could possibly go wrong?
Oh, God.
Exposure to oxygen will cause them to burst into flame. We don't know what happened with that woman's headphones. It probably wasn't overcharging unless they were really cheap headphones.
Yeah.
Much more likely that something failed, like in the Note 7. Can you prevent that? No.
Really what it comes down to is the company's doing proper battery testing. And one of the things that's come as a consequence of Samsung's problems, and hopefully we'll see this with whatever headphone company that was that made this specific headphone, is better battery testing. Now, there are third parties that actually do certification. There's groups like the UI.
UL.
UL.
Underwriters Lab,
Yeah, that will actually oversee a company's testing methods. And see if these things are as safe as they should be. And if Samsung can make a mistake like this, it's kind of sad to say, but a lot of companies can. So you really got to be careful with what you're buying. If it looks like a knockoff, it's a
don't
great deal.
Don't get cheap Chinese.
Yeah, if it's a great deal on Alibaba or even Amazon or whatever, you might want to steer clear of it, because if you do have a battery in that sort of situation and things go wrong, it's just not worth it. So
it doesn't. The good news is it doesn't happen very often. The bad news is if it does, you're going to be very sorry. But aren't we all carrying? I have a lithium-ion battery here. A lithium-ion battery.
Got one in my pocket.
Every camera we have on the set has lithium-ion batteries. We're anything that can hold enough energy to do this has the risk that energy could be released in a sudden manner, which is called an explosion, or at the very least a bursting into flamesion. So there's always that risk. I think, though, as you say, get good, well-made stuff from good companies, and you don't need to get an additional protection. The protection is built in.
Yep. Yeah. The weak, the two spots where there could be a problem is just on how the battery is made and how the software that controls the charging and the discharging is built.
Right.
And so if you're buying something from a brand you can trust, then that's really the best thing you can do.
Yeah. I mean, what you were looking for should be built into every device you get, that protection.
Yeah.
I wouldn't worry about it too much. It's a sad thing. If you feel a real caution, if you feel your device getting extra warm, if your headphones or your phone
stop
or any device,
using it.
Stop using it.
Yeah.
If you're on a plane, I don't know what to do. Maybe
turn it off.
Turn it off if you can. Remove the battery if you can. Put it in something safe if you can.
Mm-hmm.
Plane is the worst case scenario
because you
don't want to release those fumes into the cabin and things like that.
Yeah.
But if you're at home or whatever, put it in the bathroom on the tile floor. Get it out of there. Because if it's starting to get runaway heat up, that's the first symptom of something worse about to happen.
Yeah, I wish we had better advice for this one. I really do.
I wish they'd let us explode a battery in the studio.
Well, we got to get one of those shiny silver fire suits, the kind of drag racers used to wear in the 50s. I'll put that on.
Would you?
I'm down to put that on. I'll put on a fire suit. And then we got to get the fire department down here. We got to get my brother's a firefighter back in Phoenix.
Oh,
so I trust firefighters.
There you go.
I'm cool with that. Let's get the fire
department.
Get
your brother
down
up here.
But I'm not going
to
use
I guess
an
if
axe.
We'd called the Petaluma Fire Department and said, we'd like to explode a battery, would you help? They would have come over.
Controlled burn of some kind.
Yeah, controlled burn. Nate, welcome to the family, Nate OG.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm excited to be a staff member here at Twit.
Doesn't he fit in nice? He's really.
Is it because of the shirt? Is that why?
Yeah, he's even got the wardrobe.
Don't expect this on most Saturdays.
You don't wear shirts like this?
Nah.
Doesn't he look great? Shouldn't he wear shirts like this? Yeah. Look how handsome he is in that shirt. Yeah, yeah. Me, no. Him, yeah.
Thank you.
You're going to make me blush.
We look forward to having a lot more of you. This week, you're going to be filling in for Jason Howell.
Yeah, I'll be filling in every TNT. Day for Jason on TNT.
We're going to see you Sunday. Not this Sunday, a week from Sunday on Twit.
You got it. Yeah.
And I hope a lot more of you. And every other week here on the new Screensavers.
I'm thrilled.
Welcome
thrilled.
To the family.
Thank you.
Thanks to you for being here. Thanks to our great studio audience. If you want to be in the studio audience, we'd love to have you. All you have to do is email tickets at twit.tv. You can also watch our live streams. We're everywhere now, not only twit.tv/live, but youtube.com/twit. Yes, we're on YouTube Live, on Twitch, twitch.tv/twit, on ustream.com/twit. And if you can't watch live, you can always get on-demand audio or video from all of our shows. In this case, it's twit.tv/NSS for the new Screensavers. We do the new Screensavers live 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time on Saturdays. That's 2200 UTC. Please stop by, join us in the chat room at irc.twit.tv. And if not, subscribe, download it, and watch it at your leisure. Just don't miss another episode. We want you back next time on the new Screensavers. Bye-bye, everybody.
Yay!
Okay, turn on the robot!